All right. Thank you, Derek. Hopefully everybody can hear me and I'm not just going to be motoring on, so I'll assume that's the case. Yeah, I was quite interested to hear the last panel talking about the counter economy, the idea that we can exchange with each other outside of the conventional economy, the corporate economy. And I would like maybe to start by expanding the idea of the counter economy a little farther, because to extend beyond exchanging with each other, because there's a whole realm of economic activity that is not recognized as such, which is the realm of gift. And I see this operating even in my neighborhood, where, yeah, like I grow stuff in my garden, we have some chickens. You know, it was actually a little diversion here. It's funny listening to these guys, you know, they're talking about guns and stuff, and you're like, wow, these are some right wingers. But then they're also talking about this hippie stuff, you know, aquaponics and organic this and organic that and raise your own. And really interesting here how defectors from the corporate dominated world, which would be considered the left, are kind of merging with defectors from the state dominated world, which would be considered the right. Anyway, and I'll say though that the unifying thing here is community. This is what people right and left, everywhere well, I don't go very many places now, but that's what people say is missing from their lives. Well, what is community actually? Community is when you can look around you at each other and feel that I need you and you need me. This is not about individual freedom so much as relationship. Having relationships that are not mediated by global markets, by big tech, by the government, but that are based in place, that include relationships with other people and beings who are not people, relationships to soil, to water, to the landscape. Like that is what it is to be at home. That's what it is to belong. And when we lack that experience, we never can feel secure. And so we crave more and more money, more and more power, more and more dominance. But it's because we're not in community. Well, community, that feeling of I need you and you need me, we need each other, that is inimical to the kind of money economy that we've been in which you don't need anybody because you can pay for it. I don't need my neighbors because I can order on Amazon. And we've gone down this track of more and more, it seems like more and more independence from each other. But actually, it's more and more dependence, dependence on distant institutions. Until now, in the COVID era, that dependency has gotten almost complete for many, many people. We're dependent on even shopping. That's dependent on technology. You can't even just go somewhere and buy something anymore. Everybody listening to this has experienced probably the migration of more and more dimensions of life onto the screen. And how can you really have community then? So as we exit the COVID era, we ask ourselves, well, okay, it's not a given that we're going to exit the COVID era, but that's a whole other topic. But let's just say, as we exit the COVID era, we ask, what do we want to reclaim from pre-COVID and from pre-COVID, from previous generations? And what maybe do we have we given up that maybe we don't really need anymore? Like, I don't know, vacuous tourism and things like that. But if we want to reclaim community, then we can take this opportunity of what we're calling the greater reset, the great reset, and see how that applies to the economic realm. Now, the last panel talked about what you can do outside of the mainstream economy. But I think it's also important as a collective to also talk about, well, what about the dominant economy? It's not just going to go away by itself. I mean, we could foresee chaotic collapse, but I don't want to put my energy there. I don't want to hope for that, because the dislocation, the suffering that results from total economic collapse is just unimaginable. And yeah, maybe there's something beautiful on the other side, but can't we do it in a gentler way? You know, we saw what collapse, even this wasn't even a total collapse, but a pretty big collapse in the former Soviet Union in the 90s, you know, and life expectancy plummeted by 10 years. I mean, it was really bad. So I would like to talk about how we can transition the dominant economy so that it moves in the direction of some of the ideals that have come up already in this program. So that, for example, the economy and the money system no longer is the enemy of community, no longer is the enemy of nature. How can we change it? Because really, the money system, money itself, is simply an agreement. It's a story. It's the meaning that we give to symbols. Most of it isn't even physical now. I mean, cash is like 3% or something like that, or less, of money now. And you know, in a way, this is true even if we use gold and silver as currency, or commodities, or representations of commodities. Like, even gold and silver, it's not actually that useful outside of an agreement that it is valuable. I mean, you can make jewelry out of it and stuff, but I mean, come on, 2/3 of all the gold ever mined in history, 2/3 of it is sitting in vaults right now. If it were useful, it wouldn't be sitting in vaults. Anyway, I don't need to argue that point too much, but just to say that money is a story, it's an agreement, and we can make a new story. Before COVID, we were told, well, we just don't have the money to have universal healthcare, free higher education, guaranteed basic income. I mean, come on, we couldn't afford any of that. But now, all of a sudden, $3 trillion of stimulus becomes available. Where does that money come from? There's an unlimited amount of money when we understand that it is an agreement. By the same token, the national debt is an agreement. Everyone's personal debt is an agreement. So I just want to be maybe, I don't have a huge amount of time to lay out a whole picture, but I want to, you know, first affirm the value of local community. Like, this is, it's not just, you can't measure it in conventional economics. The value, the benefit you get from knowing the people around you, from having full relationships, to know the names and the stories of your neighbors, to feel needed, to eat food grown by somebody you know, to be able to feel free to enact values that don't make sense in terms of quantities of dollars and cents, but that make sense to the heart when we see how beautiful the results are of, say, growing food in the most ecological and beautiful way, and to see soil recover, and to see birds come back, and to see the water table rise. And maybe you don't get economically rewarded for that. But if we are able to shrink the, so this isn't only about transitioning or changing the global economy, it's also about shrinking its domain and reclaiming some of life from money. I mean, this is, even in my lifetime, so much of life has migrated into the money realm. When I was a kid, people rarely paid for childcare, for example. Neighbors watched the kids. People rarely paid for cooking. You bought raw ingredients. People didn't pay for entertainment as much. People still got together and had fun themselves. There were still, pickup baseball games and things like that. In my father's time, he said the whole neighborhood would get together and play guitars and sing folk songs in suburbia in the 1940s. So all of these functions have been monetized. And the reason there's, see, one reason that they've been, it's not that we're better off when we pay for other people to sing our songs or play our sports or take care of our children. It's that it grows the economy for that to happen. And we have a money system that relentlessly pushes for economic growth, that requires it, that compels it. And that economic system and that story of money that compels it is called debt. Well, it's called usury. It's a system that is in which money is created as interest-bearing debt. So I've gone on a circuitous route to say that any true reset is going to have to address debt. And I, by address, I mean, to some extent, cancel. Any system that keeps all of the debts on the books is not actually a reset. And we have historical precedent for what is possible. Going back to ancient Greece, Solon, the great wise leader of pre-classical Athens, he took power at a time when the concentration of wealth was increasing, where people were losing their land and even their own freedom. Back in those days, if you couldn't pay your debts, you became a slave. And the society was collapsing because of that. And people were getting violent. People were, they were getting their guns, so to speak. And social unrest was brewing. And he declared a cancellation of the debts, restored the lands of those who had lost them to their creditors. And it was, it's, you know, it's called, I can't remember the Greek term for it, but in English we call that a jubilee. And this is the idea comes from a recognition that it's not right to hold a debt over someone's head forever. And furthermore, that a lot of the debt that is in place today was is illegitimate. If in like for the majority now of Americans, you have to borrow just to live the same standard of living as your parents or grandparents did as a middle class person. A lot of people are going into debt, student loan debt, medical debt, credit card debt. And it's not that you're profligate. People are working harder now, two incomes instead of one, to have the same lifestyle as a middle class family in the 1950s or 60s. So there's a brewing resentment that has taken the form of all kinds of populist movements. To some extent, and I'm not going to say the whole thing, but to some extent, this is behind the Trump phenomenon. It's a profound disaffection with the establishment and its story of progress. And if you're a good citizen and you work hard and you get good grades and you go to a good college, et cetera, you're gonna be okay. You're gonna do well. You're gonna be better off than your parents. People are not experiencing that. So there's this profound disaffection, and this realization, this understanding that, you know what? Maybe this whole system that has put me into such debt is illegitimate. And we can apply it on a global level too. The so-called third world. Nations all over Africa, South America, South Asia, laboring under enormous debt burdens, which basically means all of their wealth gets siphoned off into interest payments to global capital. So they basically sell their resources, and in return, they get a piece of paper that says you're up to date on your debt payments. Does that sound familiar to anybody? So there's an economic and a moral logic to debt cancellation, to jubilee on some level. Now, I'm not saying totally abolish all debts instantaneously, because we're all interconnected, and one person's debt is another person's savings account. I mean, a savings account is a debt owed you by the bank, really. So this is not something for abrupt heroic measures, but it's the understanding beneath it that we are in a debt trap right now that is siphoning the wealth from the majority into the hands of a very few. In the time of COVID, I was just looking at some statistics. The world's billionaires have gotten $4 trillion richer. America's 1% has gotten about $5 trillion richer in the last 9 months. Well, where's that money coming from? Is that because the global economy is growing so fast that the billionaires' share is making them richer? No, the global economy shrunk this year, but the share of the billionaires is bigger. That means even less for everybody else. And probably a lot of you are feeling that in a very literal way. So I just want to put this out there as a pillar of any genuine reset. If there's going to be bailouts, let them be debtors' bailouts, not creditors' bailouts like last time, not bailing out AIG and whatever, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, General Motors. Like, what about bailing out the small businesses and the mortgage holder, the people who owe mortgages and credit cards, what about student loans and medical debt? What about bailing them out? This is, I think, if there's any unifying issue right now, for true populism, it's got to be debt. And it's also perhaps the greatest vulnerability of the establishment if we went on a debt strike. And I don't know if the time for that is now, but once the public repudiates debt, it becomes nothing but symbols in a database. It has power only because of our agreements. And I think that our agreements are wearing thin. So that's just one. Yeah, that's one. Another one I wanted to mention was what the previous gentlemen were talking about, the value of community and the understanding that there's more to life than what can be monetized, and that when we try to monetize too much of life and account for everything, then we lose all of the things we can't account for. So we have this, and this is what's happened in a growth dependent economy. When the money system is based on interest bearing debt, that's how money's created in our system. A bank lends money into existence, or the Federal Reserve purchases government securities, creating new money thereby. Every time that happens, new debt is created too. And because it's normally at interest, there's more debt than money, always, which means we're always in competition, which means to pay back that debt, either you have a lot of bankruptcies because there's more debt than money. You can't pay it all back mathematically. Or when the debts come due, even more money needs to be created to pay those debts, but that creates even more debt, and then more money needs to be created, and more, and the money is created through lending to credit-worthy borrowers, i.e., those who can pay it back, i.e., those who are going to make even more money than you've lent them, i.e., those that are creating new goods and services. So, anyway, that's it. Takes a bit longer to really flesh that out, but just to say, there's a reason why every government in the world wants to grow the economy. It's a necessity. Otherwise, the system stops working. But why? Is what the world needs right now really more and more and more? No. We don't even need more food. Yeah, there are hundreds of millions of people starving in the world, but there's also even more food, enough food to feed them all twice over, that is wasted every year. Not to mention the land that's wasted through like America's biggest irrigated crop, lawn grass, and some of these grow your own guys. I mean, you know that actually, if you set your mind to it, and it doesn't even take that much work, you can be not only self-sufficient, but feed your whole neighborhood. It happened back in World War II. In the UK, they were called victory gardens, I think. The US had them too. We managed to feed, like something like close to half of all produce was grown in gardens. In Russia today, it's still like that. Some close to half of most of many food categories, not grains, but pretty much everything else is grown in dachas, in small plots. So anyway, that's just one example of that to one example of a abundance that's already here. We don't need more and more and more. We could share more. We could have more durable goods instead of more throwaway goods. We don't need planned obsolescence. We could have repairable goods. We could have economies that are based on repair and recycling and reuse. Like we don't have to, well, in a way we do have to consume more and more and more in order to keep the system going. Because, and much time do I have left? Just checking here. Yeah, just a few minutes. I want to make sure it comes to a good conclusion. This is a classic problem of capitalism, that advances in technology mean that fewer and fewer people are necessary to produce the same amount of stuff. So how is everybody going to make money and have a job? The only way is if we consume more and more and more. Or the other option in a different kind of money system would be that we work less and less and less. And actually, what that means is that we work less and less and less to produce quantities of things, and therefore turn more and more of our human creativity and labor toward the meeting of qualitative needs, toward beauty and healing and life. That is what is possible with what I would like to see as a great reset, where we say, we're done growing. We've reached maturity as a species, physical maturity. It's time to grow in another way. Just like when a teenager reaches 18, 19 years old, maybe the growth is done. That doesn't mean he stops developing. There's so many other dimensions along which one can develop. But if you have that 18-year-old who's like, gosh, my kid stopped growing, I better give him some growth hormones. That's called economic stimulus. Give him some growth hormones, make sure he keeps growing. Like, that's crazy. It's time for the growth to stop. It's time for growth in energy use, in miles traveled, in automobiles produced. I mean, like we don't need more anymore, but we're stuck in that because of the economic system. So let's reset that. And reclaim life and beauty from the money realm. Practically speaking, that means expanding the gift economy. That means finding a way to meet people's basic quantitative needs that they don't go away. Perhaps that is a universal basic income that, of course, has to be unconditional. Otherwise, it becomes, Big Brother rewarding you for being a compliant citizen and, getting your shots and filling out your forms and whatever. So it's got to be unconditional. But, I'm not going to talk too much about universal basic income, just to say it's a two-edged sword. And if it happens without also relocalization and support for small business, I mean, look what's happened in COVID. This is why the billionaires are getting richer and richer, because the corporations and the stock market are basically being propped up, and small businesses are being left to sink or swim on their own. Or that's one reason, anyway. The central banks are inflating stock prices. I'm not going to go into all those details, but I just want to speak to a valid indignation that this is happening. It doesn't have to happen this way. It's not inevitable, and to change it depends on how willing we are to rethink everything. how willing we are to recognize that money and debt are nothing but an agreement that can be changed. Look how much we have changed in the time of COVID. That has been, those changes have been, I would say, reactionary. Some have more, nefarious explanations for that. But I don't think I'll go there now, but I will say simply that if we direct that change capacity consciously, then we could be living in a world so much more beautiful and healed and alive than the one where all the technology is here. The technology to rebuild soil, the technology to heal the water, the technology to heal trauma, collective and personal trauma. I just did a podcast with this woman, Fritzi Horstmann, who does this work in prisons. Like, people that society has written off, the amount of healing that's possible in these groups is just, like, it brings you to tears. What would happen if we turned our attention to that as a society, instead of to maintaining 800 military bases, instead of to keeping this economic machine running to produce things that ultimately we don't even need? Like, do we need, I mean, there's a whole controversy about 5G. Do we really even need it? That question's not usually asked. It's asked, well, you know, is it dangerous or not? But I mean, come on. Is it really going to improve our lives to be able to download your app in 3 seconds instead of 45 seconds? To be able to stream video anywhere on the street? I mean, really? Do we need that? We've kind of drifted unconsciously into this. And what has caused this drift, the current that is drifting us to that, is the current of the conversion of the world into money. It's the engine of economic growth. It comes down on a deep level to the system of debt. So let's reset that thinking. Let's ask the questions that haven't been asked. Like, how much is enough? Why are we really here? What is our purpose? And to touch our willingness to turn toward those purposes. Because it's right in front of us. The technologies are all there. The abundance is all there. Yeah, so I think that's all I've got to say. Let me see here. Oh yeah, perfect timing. 1 minute left. So I guess, gosh, I just motored on for half an hour. Thank you all for indulging me with that. And I guess I'll turn it back over to you, Derek, or I'm not sure what comes next.